Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome. I'm Lyle.
I'm Alan.
I'm Jeremy.
So what's you been up to?
Well, I finally got around to watching Deadpool.
Oh.
I want to see that.
What'd you think?
I had medium expectations because I heard it was good, but I'm kind of over superhero movies, even though I was a big fan of comic books. And I watched that movie, and I was really impressed. And for those who have listened to our Star Wars episode know that I'm more than happy to nitpick a movie. And I watched that movie, and I really can't think of a thing wrong with it. I thought it was really good. I would put it way up there on my list of superhero movies, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even number one. I was that impressed with it.
Wow.
Really pleased. I thought it was really well cast, really well written. Although I wasn't really looking forward to the fourth wall being broken or anything like that, because I can't say I didn't like the comic book. I'd never read the comic book, but I thought it was really well done. Ryan Reynolds, I think, can really do a certain type of comedy really well. It was written for him. I mean, it was a perfect marriage of actor and character. I can't say enough about it, which is kind of bad because I might be raising people's expectations, but probably everybody's already
I'm gonna hate it now.
Seen it, yeah.
Anyway, Ryan Reynolds is that part, you know. We saw him as Deadpool originally,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the Wolverine movie, but then he was in the Green Lantern, and
yep.
it just, you're right, it didn't really fit.
Well,
him.
Hal Jordan's not a funny character. Right. He's a man without fear. He's a bit of a rogue, so maybe they thought Ryan Reynolds would be good for that. But he's not necessarily like a rogue kind of character.
Cocky.
Yeah, he's cocky, but not, I mean, he's got the cockiness, but he doesn't have the Han Solo-esque maverick, that kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
He's got pretty much a baby face and things like that. So
wasn't that a pet project or something that he wanted to do? Like he pushed
absolutely
the, yeah, right. So that was like a big motivation because he was already the Green Lantern.
Well, now I hear like Deadpool 2 is becoming a nightmare.
The director left.
Oh.
The composer left.
Composer left as well?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That was devastating because I was going to go on quite a bit about the music, yeah.
The R rating on Deadpool,
yep.
And the influence that's kind of having, especially on the Suicide Squad, right? There was talk that they were going to try to change that, the movie there was reshooting to make it, and it ended up staying PG-13, but it seemed that the success of Deadpool had a maybe negative effect on what they were going to do with superhero movies. And I think the first project that was ruined because of that was Suicide Squad.
Well,
they did reshoots. And
I mean, if Deadpool is a lesson, well, the lesson that they should have taken from Deadpool is stay consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got what you want in the beginning, just stay with it.
Right.
Yeah, don't edit down to meet that PG-13.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or what they've done when they do the reshoots and like, oh, let's add some funny. If you didn't have funny in the beginning, you're not going to have funny in the end.
Yeah.
And Deadpool, you can see it from conception to production to post-production. Everybody was on the same page. Everybody had the same goals.
Mm.
And that was great. You mentioned that Ryan Reynolds had played Deadpool before.
Yeah.
And obviously with very mixed results. What was it? Wolverine Origins?
Yeah, the first Wolverine.
I found out that it was made during the writer's strike or a writer's strike. And a lot of Ryan Reynolds' dialogue he had to come up with on his own. It was like Deadpool speaks fast here or something like that.
Wow. Yeah. And that's why his mouth was sealed at the end.
And then there was that. He kind of gave up. He's like, oh, I'm kind of getting a block here. Why don't you tape my mouth and cut off my eyelids? All right. You know, I don't think that'll work. But
well, there's two things about this R rating. And you said that it's changing movies. And one of the things about Deadpool being R-rated, I think that is one of the things that influenced the new Wolverine movie to be R-rated as well.
I heard that Logan.
Yeah,
right?
Logan. Yeah. So you know, when everyone's like, "Oh yeah, Deadpool's R-rated, so we're gonna make an R-rated Wolverine movie." If you saw the Red Band trailer of Logan, you know it's got some violence in it.
A movie with Wolverine has some violence. All right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Deadpool
probably got the R-rating because of the nudity,
that language
and language. Yeah, the masturbation
violence.
Talk.
Well, it depends on whether like how like visceral the violence. Is like, do you see blood? Do you see holes in people? Or is it like off screen, or is it just like they fall over? You know?
Yeah, it's an off screen thing.
That's what I'm saying. Well, for the most part, when you see these movies,
just before a fight, they cut away.
Yeah.
they cut to the TV news reporting.
Just shadows.
Well,
the
like,
next Avengers movie is just, you know, like at a shower curtain and you just see them fighting behind.
Well, it's really easy to do that. Like you have someone hold a gun at someone else. You see them holding the gun. You see the guy's reaction. And then you pan back to the person who's holding the gun and they fire. You never actually see the person get hit with the bullet, but you know that they did.
I would say it is graphic, but graphic in like a comic book sense.
Well, the other thing I'm concerned about with the R rating is that I told you before.
It's the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time.
That's great. You know, I'm a big fan of RoboCop, so I like my violent movies. But as good as it is, it really limits the people who can actually see it. There's some people who don't like the violence or the language or the nudity, and they can't see it. Or, you know, some kids can't see it.
Well, I think that also brings up another lesson from Deadpool, is that don't make a movie by committee. You have your idea, you stick to the idea, and if that means not everybody is going to see it or it's not going to appeal to everybody, then so be it. Make a really good movie for the people that are going to see it. And maybe a problem with a lot of movies is they're trying to make something for everybody. Then you get Transformers.
Right.
You know, I think some movies that are for all ages can be a really good, well-told story.
I think Happy Feet, which I watched.
Which is amazing. Happy Feet's so good.
I went from Deadpool to Happy Feet, and that was a pretty good run. I'm on a really good triple because I watched The Lobster with you, Jeremy.
Oh, right.
Prior to Deadpool, and that was a good movie as
well. Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
That's quite different. It just shows how eclectic I am. Actually, we wanted to watch Mutant Chronicles, but it got sent to the wrong place.
Yes.
So we went from Mutant Chronicles to The Lobster, and only because we had to beat the pizza guy.
Yes.
So we walked into the video store, and Japan still has those. And we're like, okay, let's go find It Follows. Too hard. There's The Lobster. Yes. It's a little whiplash in style from what we were going to watch.
And we self-checked out. Against our will. And,
yeah. The lady, we go up to the counter and she goes, oh, you self-check out now. And we're like, oh, okay. So we go over to the machine and we took so long that she came over to do it for us. Well, the problem was, this is really fascinating for people, but there was like, here's how you put your card in. And I was actually putting it in the way that it said, but it was wrong. I was supposed to put it the opposite way, but I was definitely putting it in the way that the visual was.
Yeah, and when she ran the magnetic stripe, it was like, you know, a centimeter per second. It was a very slow
and
motion.
We beat the pizza guy by 1 minute.
We did. And we saw The Lobster.
Which is not a pizza movie, but it was good.
We eat a lot of pizza.
I don't eat a lot of pizza normally. Again, fascinating for people listening. I don't eat a lot of pizza normally, but I happen to eat whenever we do our gaming sessions or our podcasting sessions, we'll have pizza.
The listeners can smell the pepperoni. Yeah,
you can feel the passion. And usually we drink, but I'm not drinking tonight. I'm having an iced tea.
I'm having a really cheap drink.
You're having a Red Bull and a vodka. Now, the listeners have heard it because you keep pouring it during the podcast.
I bet you can't hear that.
We'll be doing Smell-O-Vision next episode, mm-hmm. So you'll be able to smell the alcohol fumes.
So, Jeremy, what have you been up to?
Recently, I ordered the starter set for Malifaux, the second edition. So the miniatures skirmish game set in kind of a steampunk alternative history.
Oh, okay. That's the angle. Yeah.
Right. With a lot of gothic and kind of nightmare monster factions. And it's really fun. Instead of dice, it uses a deck of cards.
Uh-huh. A deck of its own cards or a deck?
It's got its own suits, but you can use just a standard set of playing cards.
Okay.
And they just have equivalents. The suits in the game have equivalents to hearts and diamonds and clubs. So they call it a fate deck, and you can cheat fate. So you can cheat rolls based on what you have in your hand, but you only have so much of that you can do. And you redraw your hand every turn. It's got a really nice look. The miniatures were redesigned. They look to be computer designed now. The first edition was all kind of hand-sculpted metal, and this is all computer-designed plastic. And it's got a really nice feel to it, and the gameplay is great. It gets really deep and complicated because the suits of the cards that you play can also trigger effects on different attacks and things. So it's a very interesting, very fun, and very fast-to-play skirmish game. That's the new thing, and I'll be building a crew in that game and hopefully getting some time to...
Didn't you build a crew that year?
It's just a starter set. Yeah. Oh, okay. They use soul stones as kind of the currency instead of gold or something.
Okay.
And soul stones, the number of stones is kind of the size of your crew. And I think in the starter set, it's about 25, 27 soul stone crews. And usual games are 50. The characters themselves have abilities that have synergy and things. So you kind of want, it gets a little tricky because you want to build a crew based on a certain type of focus, like melee attack or ranged attack. Or
Is it more like War Machine than 40K, let's say?
Yeah, definitely. The scale of it. So the number, you're probably not going to have more than
50 is
10.
A lot, though.
No, 50 stones, but that would give you about 10.
Oh,
7 to 10. The crew is about 7 to 10. The crews are measured in stones because that's the currency you pay. So the characters themselves cost between like 2 to 7 mm-hmm. stones each, and you build a crew with certain focuses. It's a cheap game to get into. The starter set is a good way to just kind of learn the rules. It's not enough miniatures to do much with, but it was kind of my first step.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, the ones that he painted look real good. Have you seen the pictures of them?
Yeah, one looked like a butcher or a hospital orderly or maybe a crazy surgeon.
Yeah, the theme is demons in an asylum. So
demons versus an asylum.
Versus the staff of an asylum. So doctors and orderlies.
Oh, I see.
And nurses versus demons. But it's all that steampunk era, that 19th century. It's nice too, because they've got an interesting range. So it goes from Gothic, but also to Western. And what they did with the rules and the redesign of the game is fun.
Yeah, I think the card mechanic is really interesting. Because one of the things about minis that I never really got into was just the dice rolling. I don't know. I'm not a real big dice fan. And when you have a deck of cards, you said you get to choose the card that you play?
You can cheat it. Yeah, you're flipping off the top of a deck, but you have a hand that you can cheat a higher value.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, in addition to that, you kind of know what cards are in the deck and which ones have already been used. So you can kind of do a little bit of deduction to see what would come next.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting because they have a mechanic where between each turn, you can discard and then you reshuffle your discard back into your draw pile and reshuffle the deck. So you can't get to the point where you're going to know what the last three cards of the deck are. You never go completely through your deck unless you have kind of a milling ability. So it's very interesting because it prevents you from being able to kind of stack everything towards the end. You're going to have to play things within a turn and
still a bit of gambling there, but you can do some deduction.
Yeah, yeah, much less random than dice, definitely.
Like when we were playing Loka, I know it's not a mini game, but still, if you botch your roll, there goes your screwed.
Right.
I'm like, no matter how good your strategy was, that dice can still screw you.
Right, and losing soldiers from that game was so painful.
Yeah.
There are games, the name's escaping me, but what you can do with dice is similar to what you do with cards in that you pre-roll them, but you choose which roll to play at a different, on the turn that you want. So if you're like, well, I really, really need to hit this person, so I'll use this high roll, which means I won't get it later. And you can even add it to different games that you play. I think we did something like that with Rifts, where you rolled five things. Right. It's not part of the actual game, but you rolled five d20s, and those are your values for the next five actions or the five times that you need to roll dice. And the reason was it's just to speed things up.
Mm-hmm, right.
But it was also interesting is that you can choose the rolls on any given turn.
So
you're also nice. I mean, you have a countdown, or maybe you're hoping that the combat will end quickly, so you're using the high rolls, and then if it doesn't, then that's going to be a pretty sad mid game. It was fun.
Oh, okay.
I believe in Rifts we made it closed information.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit of an honor system. I mean, if you're going to cheat,
then
why
are you
playing
a game?
Yeah, to win.
That's why I'm
playing a game. But you were telling us that you did some sort of Halloween movie marathon, Alan?
Every season, Halloween and Christmas, I usually just, in the month of October, I watch nothing but Halloween movies.
How
at
unique.
Least I try. Not unique.
Yeah,
I know. Well, no, seriously, I watch as many as I can, every day. But no, for Halloween, I watched a bunch of Halloween movies, and I came across some really interesting ones. For example, for kids, have you ever seen Paranorman?
Paranorman?
Do you know about it?
Is it a play on paranormal?
Yes.
Okay.
His name's Norman.
Right.
And he can see ghosts. So the title of the movie
is Paranorman. He sees a ghost?
He sees all ghosts.
Oh, okay.
No,
Ghost the movie? Because you think that you think he sees ghosts.
He sees Patrick Swayze.
He's a real big fan of Demi Moore Patrick Swayze.
No. Anyway, no, Paranorman is the second movie officially made by Laika Studios, people who did Coraline and recently Kubo and the Two Strings. Laika, man.
So
Kubo is going to be nominated for Best Animation. And it's going to get an Academy Award.
Okay.
Paranorman is a little hidden gem. Seriously, if you like animation, if you like stop motion, if you like zombies, this is a really cute movie. And I ended up watching
it. So he sees ghosts in a zombie world?
Well, he sees ghosts. He talks to ghosts all the time. And in this town, there is a curse. And every year, this crazy skeptic has to read a story to a little girl somewhere. Otherwise, the witch could rise up and terrorize the town. And it's up to Norman to save everyone. Because the dead start rising and everyone starts going crazy and trying to burn them and kill them and stuff.
All right. So pretty good?
Yeah, it's really good. If you haven't seen Paranorman, I would really suggest checking it out. Two other movies. One is amazing, which is American Werewolf in London. I rewatched that for the first time in a long time, and that movie is a masterpiece. I can go on for a while about how good that movie is.
Probably most people have seen it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of people haven't.
Oh, they've heard about it.
They've heard of it.
That was the big special effects, the transformation scene was always being shown for this is the height of special effects for the, American Werewolf in London.
Well, the thing is, though, they have those really cool effects scenes, but a lot of times when you see the werewolf, to not give a away that it is puppet, they always like don't show it. And I really like that in those old horror movies where they don't always show this threat. Like they'll show it from the monster's perspective, like chasing someone. And it really just leaves a lot to the viewer and the audience to kind of just imagine this threat that's coming at them. And then they wait for this slow reveal. And then when you actually see it, you're just like, oh my God. The movie was really done well. There's so much good in that movie. When it comes to like the editing, when it comes to the music choices, when it comes to the visual effects, when it comes to the pacing, and when it comes to the storytelling, I really like it.
Yeah, definitely a classic.
It's such a simple story, but done really, really well. We'll get on later about my thoughts on the remake that's coming out soon.
Okay. And you have another obscure movie on your list.
Yeah, finally. Since I watch a lot of movies, I often watch a lot of bad movies. I came across a new one called Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat.
Oh, you skipped Poltergeist. That's what I was talking about.
Poltergeist. Yeah. I saw that for the first time.
Okay.
That's not as cool as Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat, which...
Is it Sundown : The Vampire in Retreat?
Yes.
Okay.
Sundown : The Vampire in Retreat. It's a movie by Anthony Hickox. You don't know of him?
No.
Well, let me list a few of his movies. Waxworks 1 and 2.
Okay.
Hellraiser 3.
I've seen Waxworks.
Warlock 2.
Waxworks is the one that had...
The guy from Gremlins. Zach something something is in Waxworks, which I really like Waxworks. Anyway, no, he made this movie, and I was a little surprised. Basically, what it is, it's a Western movie.
Is this a new movie?
No, it's like from 1989.
Okay.
It's a vampire in the Western West. Movie. Yep. The town's name is Sundown. It's where all the vampires hang out, and there's two factions of vampires, and they start fighting. And this descendant of Van Helsing shows up trying to kill all the vampires, played by Bruce Campbell versus David Carradine. Anyway, if you're into like B-movies like and crazy, silly horror movies, this is a fun one.
Is it deliberately fun, like kind of funny, or is it fun because it's so bad?
Funny because it's so bad, and it's just like really obscure. Like there's a lot of interesting ideas. For example, the two vampire factions come up to each other. The guys that are for not killing people and the guys who are for killing people. They want to...
It's pretty one-sided war.
Well, they're like, hey...
I mean, we should drop this not killing people thing.
No. For the sake of being a vampire, they're finding an alternative to actually drinking blood from humans.
Right.
And the other people are like, this is our nature. We want to drink blood from humans.
Yeah.
They come up and he's just like, a gun? What kind of bullets kills a vampire? Ha! And he goes... Bam! Wooden bullets. I love it.
Okay.
Super cheese. So yeah, if you're into that, you got to check it out. You're okay. Writing it down right now?
Yeah, no, it's burning my brain. Sundown.
If you want to see a good movie, American Werewolf in London. If you want to see a bad movie, Sundown.
You're actually recommending American Werewolf in London?
Of course. Yeah. I think a lot of people haven't seen it. That's why they're making a remake.
All right. Put it in the comments whether or not you've seen it.
Can't wait for those CG special effects. Oh, so yeah, I guess what were we talking about? Netrunner?
Some Twitch? Oh, snap. Yeah, that's right. We Twitched recently.
Twitch streamed.
And before we get into the topic, we had an Idle Red Hands first, and that was we Twitch streamed. Is that the term? Or we live streamed on Twitch?
Live streaming? We have a Kansai Android Netrunner group, and we play the game around here, and we decided that we're going to start live streaming our games whenever we get together. Decided to associate it with Idle Red Hands, put the logo there and see if we can kind of make a bit of a network there. And since we do games in the podcast, why not do things like YouTube and live streams?
And we're planning to do a live stream, and I'll say it just to kind of force us to do it, our Frostgrave campaign.
Oh, right. Definitely.
We did have that in the works. We're supposed to actually be doing that tonight, but somebody didn't show up. The episode topic, and because it's towards the end of the year, is we thought we would talk about what we're looking forward to in 2017, both kind of media, TV and movies, and books, and games. So these are just things that we're looking forward to, and some things that we're not looking forward to so much. So first up will be media. Jeremy, what's something that you're interested in seeing?
Well, in 2017, definitely the second John Wick movie.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like the first, and I don't know what they're going to do with the second, but yeah, I'm looking forward to some more of that. It just had a nice tone and, you know, great gunplay, and yeah, it was serious, but all the characters types were very over the top. Yeah, it was enjoyable. So who's seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, neither.
John Wick?
Yeah, John Wick.
John Wick's
the first.
Yeah,
John Wick.
I liked it, but I'm not sure, like, I'd be excited about a sequel.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going to take it, but I'd like to see
probably
more.
A lot of violence.
a lot more shooting.
Somebody's going to make John mad, and then he's going to do
tear
some
up his
killing.
Basement again.
Yeah. Well, right? you like John Wick. You made a Netrunner deck based off of John Wick.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, very unsuccessful John Wick deck. It didn't work. But yeah, I did. This goes back to Magic, where I would take a theme, and not necessarily like in-game, but an out-of-game theme, like usually from a movie or from songs, and then build a deck. So I would build, I had a glam rock series of Magic decks. There was the T-Rex deck. There was Rebel Rebel from the David Bowie song, and just try to build things from that. So Netrunner, I'd been made John Wick.
That's really
and
cool.
And it didn't work.
You should publish them anyway, man. Like, people on like NetrunnerDB are really into...
Losing decks?
Not losing decks. They're really into good theme decks.
But I think I would publish it, and then people tell me how much better they could make it.
Well, I don't know.
Using the theme of John Wick.
Mm. But yeah. Still, Snake versus Man, you gotta like realize that, dude.
Sorry, what? Snake versus Man?
Man versus Snake, is that
Man versus Snake.
I finished watching that today.
Oh, did you? Yeah. What's the name of the game?
Nibbler.
Nibbler, that's right.
It's a game?
Documentary of the Nibbler champion of 1976 and his comeback. To reclaim the record.
What's Nibbler?
It's an arcade game? It's like that snake game on mobile phones where you eat things and you get the tail gets longer, but it's more of a Pac-Man maze, so you kind of run into yourself more easily.
Oh, okay. No, never
heard. Yeah.
That documentary was really good, actually.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was all about, like, the thing is, they came up with this tournament where if you could make the score roll over to 1 billion, they would give you a free Nibbler machine, and it was a challenge to do that. But the thing is, it would take 2 straight days of playing the game to be able to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. So it was more like a game marathon on 1 quarter. So these guys would sit there for like 48 hours playing this game, trying to break 1 billion.
I think there's a guy who played Pac-Man to the end.
Yeah, a lot of the guys. Yeah,
or he was were part of this documentary. Yeah. Anyway.
All right, but John Wick 2.
John Wick 2. Yeah. Man. Cut. I'm just looking forward to it. I've always liked the cheesy gunplay movies, and that fit exactly what I wanted to see that night. So yeah, I'm happy to see more.
That's cool.
How about you, Alan?
Me? Yeah. Where should I start? I have a whole big list of things.
Well, we can just more like a keep going map. Around.
I'm sure and people actually, are looking forward to a new movie. That they're
Underworld 5.
Oh, Blood Wars.
I know like a lot of the movies on my list will be on Lyle's Do Not Look Forward to lists. But yeah, wait, I'm really looking forward to Underworld 5.
A trailer actually came out for that, eh?
A lot of trailers came out for that. They're really pumping it.
You know they're getting divorced, eh?
I think the
director and Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
Beckinsale.
Beckinsale and Len Wiseman. And it's kind of weird. So the thing is, though, she was married to...
Michael Sheen.
She was married to Michael Sheen when they did the first movie. When they were making the first movie, Underworld, he was in that movie with her. As Lucien, the werewolf guy.
Okay.
Basically, while making
the movie... I was trying to recall parts of Underworld. I think I've seen the first two. And I was just like, well, he was in the first one?
Yeah, he was in the first. He was in the first one and the third one.
Have I seen the third movie?
Bits of the second one as well, during flashbacks. So anyway, like while they're making this movie, she has an affair with him. And she has a daughter with Michael Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's married Len Wiseman, and she's been married to Len Wiseman for a long time.
Well, for Underworld.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, Michael Sheen came back to reprise that role in Part 3, despite like ill feelings towards the producer/director.
Awkward.
It is.
Does he, though?
And the thing is, like, when she was doing promotions for Underworld 5, they asked about her greatest villain, and she said, oh, well, it's got to be Lucien or Michael Sheen, you know, the father of my daughter. And she was like, she still really likes him. It's so, I never get into celebrity gossip, but for some reason, this whole Len Wiseman, Kate Beckinsale, Michael Sheen thing, I'm invested.
So wait, is the daughter half werewolf?
I guess so. She's a hybrid.
What do they call them? Is a hybrid.
Yeah,
in World of Darkness, they call them abominations. A vampire werewolf.
I don't know. I'm a sucker for it. I always liked Vampire the Masquerade. I never got into Werewolf as much, but I liked the World of Darkness. And
Werewolf, it's really hard to control your players because it's like every problem is like you have a hammer. It's called your Krynos form. So everything is a nail. It's like, oh, the police officer comes to talk to you. I turn into Krynos and kill him. I was like, all right.
Well, there you go.
And it's a very... I mean, they definitely do a really good job of encouraging a pack mentality. Like, you come from your tribes and that. Much more so than a vampire.
Vampire, yeah.
Imagine you got a bunch of werewolves that hang out together.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been a sucker for these movies for a while. And I don't know. I just like that it came at this time where people could still kind of make original stories. They could make a kind of original ideas.
What are you talking about?
Well, everything's based on a video game or based on a book or a remake of something else. You know, this was like
you know, based on Vampire the Masquerade and Werewolf the Apocalypse. Well, they sued them. They didn't win, but they sued them.
It was actually from, and I guess it does have its similarities to Vampire the Masquerade and World of Darkness, which kind of drew me towards it. But I think it has its own origins.
Okay.
It's its own world.
Right.
Do you want to know about the good movies I'm looking forward to? Like Patterson, new Jim Jarmusch movie.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's the first time I've seen Adam Driver in another movie, like besides Star Wars. It was Kylo Ren.
I think he's mostly known for Girls before he was Kylo Ren.
I haven't seen Girls.
Yeah, neither have I.
But yeah, it's nice to see him in another movie as a bus driver in New Jersey. That's where I'm from, if you didn't guess.
You jerseyed that up so much.
But the thing is, he's like North Jersey. I'm from South Jersey, so it doesn't count.
Where's Jersey Shore?
North.
Okay.
Anyway.
Where are the gardens?
South.
Okay.
The gardens part, the garden part of the Garden State's in the South. I'm in the Pine Barrens, actually.
What's that movie that...
Snake Eyes.
No. Made from the... Very bad guess. Made by the guy from Scrubs.
Oh, Garden State. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's from New Jersey as well.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward. I love Jim Jarmusch. You know, we're actually born on the same day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I always watch a Jim Jarmusch movie on my birthday.
The other really?
I do.
Actually, it's his birthday.
On my birthday. He stole it. The other thing I'm actually really looking forward to, besides Star Wars movies, are Riverdale. They're coming out with an Archie
TV series.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it kind of feels like Archie meets Twin Peaks. Are you familiar with any of the characters from Archie?
Yeah, of course. I read it.
Do you know...
Reggie Mantle? Yes.
Well, Reggie Jughead. Mantle. I'm talking about the... What's her name? Ginger?
Not familiar.
The redhead?
Midge? No, she wasn't. She was a brunette.
I thought it was just Betty and Veronica.
No, no.
It was Betty, Veronica...
Cheryl. Cheryl Blossom.
Oh, Cheryl, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And she's got a twin brother, right?
Didn't know that.
She does. She has a twin brother, and sometimes he pops in the comics. The story starts off, they go off killed. Together on in a boat ride,
yeah.
And her twin brother dies. Just shows up dead on the shore somewhere.
Okay.
It's all this, like, kind of this murder mystery, who killed Cheryl's brother.
Also sounds like Veronica Mars.
It's actually, I think it's directed by some of the same people.
Okay.
I'm not positive about that, but I've heard that. Some people have been drawing similarities. Luke Perry's going to be in it. I think he's playing Pops Tate.
Okay.
Yeah, man. Wow. It's nice to see. And it's totally going to be a teen drama. It's totally going to be all this teen W... The CW teen drama.
Yeah, yeah.
And Luke Perry's going to... Yeah, CW. They
do good work. Yeah, I like
it. Yeah, them. So he's going to be back into this teen scene, which is kind of cool because he was, you know, part of the original 90210. He
started it all.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm going to check it out because I love Archie. I always have a stack of Archies in my house.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't lent me any.
You want some?
Yeah. You always tell me about these Archie comics. You never lend me any.
Yeah, they're just the digest.
But the new ones, right?
No, actually, I don't have the new ones yet. The ones by Mark Waid. Oh man, I want to read those.
No, I've already read all the old stuff. Are you talking about classic Archie? I've already read those.
No, there's always, you pick up a digest. There's always something new, man.
Okay.
Unless you've read them all, like seriously.
Well, I stopped reading them when in the 80s, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I keep a stack of digests. So you'll see him in.
I grew up
places.
Thinking that how you date is you didn't have like a steady girlfriend. You just week from week jump around different girls and it didn't matter. Oh,
well, that's the thing about Archie.
Your life,
man,
was a shocking reality.
He's got two girls. But dude, check out the trailer for Riverdale. It looks
pretty
good.
No, I've seen like the casting and that because I'm very curious.
Looks good.
I saw that.
Did you ever see the Pussycats?
No.
New Josie and the Pussycats, they look so good, man. Josie and the Pussycats live in Riverdale. They're going to be in the teen drama. Is there anything else you guys are looking forward to? What are you looking forward to, Lyle?
I'm really looking forward to the Trainspotting movie.
Oh, yeah. T2. Yeah, me too.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
T2.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Send that trailer off.
Skynet comes and corners the Hare Road Market.
So it's the same cast and they're moving them ahead the same number of years?
It's based on the book escapes me. It is based on book that follow up Trainspotting.
Ah, mm-hmm.
It's not called Trainspotting 2. It has a different name. It's based off of that, but the timeline's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So the timeline's a bit more advanced because they waited so long to make this movie. So I'm imagining all the characters are much older in the movie than they were in the original book, which I didn't read. Yeah, I've seen some clips of it, and that looks... I mean, Trainspotting was such a great movie, and it was such a, you know, really like a snapshot of the 90s, or a really big part of the 90s, I think, like Trainspotting, Pulp Fiction, those kind of movies. And
I loved hearing
really that. Nostalgic from that era of movie.
I loved hearing Born Slippy again in the trailer by Underworld. But anyway, yeah, that trailer, man, it almost gave me a heart attack just because it was just, I was so into just seeing that new footage and how their lives progress and all the things that are going to take place in this new movie.
I'm most curious about Sick Boy. What's going on with him?
Yeah.
And Logan.
Logan.
Yeah. Wow. I think we already referred to it earlier in this episode, but I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. That looks really good. But go on about Logan, man. What are you excited about seeing in Logan?
Well, Hugh Jackman. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, well, I like the idea. You're the comic book guy, so what do you think about, like, the story? What do you think the story is going to be about, since you know a lot about the comics?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know, man. It's going to be old Logan. I mean, if it's calling it Logan, I would almost think it would be kind of a take on old man Logan, but it's not going to be the same story, which was way in the future. Because Logan can't die, and then he meets up, goes against what is the Hulk or the Maestro or something, Maestro Hulk or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
But it's going to be just in the future, but not that far advanced. And I don't know, Logan kind of giving it up or hanging it up. It's going to give it a closure.
Yeah, because this is his last time he's playing Wolverine, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And R-rated Wolverine. I think we'd mentioned that before. So yeah. We'll get to see what those claws really do.
Claws sticking through someone's head and stuff. You know, I saw that. I saw it already. It's in the Red Band trailer.
Oh. So does Snappy. So old man Logan doesn't have the bone claws. He's still adamantium. What's because that wasn't there was a Wolverine storyline where he had bone claws.
Yeah.
Well, originally he has the bone claws, and then they fused the. I think originally the idea was the claws were added.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they fused the adamantium to his bones, and then they gave him these adamantium claws.
Mm-hmm.
Then they decided, no, it would actually be cooler if he actually has claws on his own. And they've just fused the adamantium to the bones. Because when you look at the claws, they kind of look like knives at some point. And then sometimes they look more like claws, like rounded.
You're right.
And then they had the storyline where Magneto just
rips all the adamantium
out of, I think that was Age of Apocalypse. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong. Anyway.
It's got a hologram on the cover.
Yeah, rips it out. Yeah, and then he's got to learn to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And the story, or the movies follow that kind of idea, is that he has actually starts with the bone claws, and then they fuse the adamantium to it. So I think in the storyline, or in Logan, he's just going to continue on with the adamantium. At no point have they taken it out of him, mm-hmm. I don't believe.
There was only one time.
Oh, yes, in The Wolverine. No, they just take away his healing factor, right?
Yeah,
I'm not. No, they in The Wolverine, they took away his adamantium.
Did they?
Because he fights the Silver Surfer.
Silver
Samurai.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, Fantastic Four 3 gets his claws cut off, doesn't he? Or am I not remembering that correctly?
I think, they did get it. Yeah, you're right. But they were still like the metal claws, but you could kind of see like the bone in the claws.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's been a while since I saw that because...
I didn't mind it, even though it had some silly things like the way the bullet train...
The bullet train was... I thought that was fun, man.
With the...
I
thought that was really fun. Kind of...
I like that.
Air conditioning units on top of the bullet train. So...
I'm wondering, is there anything else you're looking forward to, cinema-wise?
Patient Zero, I gotta...
What is Patient Zero?
It's just one of those outbreak movies. So I'm a real sucker for those. I hadn't really heard much about it, but then anytime Contagium or... Phase 6 is the Japanese title. I think it's called Carriers in North America. But those kind of movies, I really, really enjoy. And then there's a new King Arthur movie coming out.
Right.
With Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy and Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm. And how about Ghost in the Shell?
Ooh, we'll talk about that one later. Well, I don't know.
I'm curious. I'm curious about it. I don't know why. It's going to be interesting to see Hollywood try to make a live-action copy of a great anime film. So I think they're pretty much trying to do it shot for shot, the anime. So I don't know why there's necessarily a need for a live-action movie, because animation doesn't really go out of date. It doesn't need to be remade the same way live-action does.
I've only read the comic book, so I haven't
seen really?
It.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. The original...
actually, I think the movie... I love the comic, but the movie's less perverted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and very dark, kind of in a slow... pace. It's the same director that did the Pat Labor movies.
Yeah. Mamoru Oshii.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
He also did like Jinro and Red Spectacles. You know that the Stormtrooper armored soldier movies, man.
Oh, what's that? Something Dogs.
Stray Dogs.
Stray Dogs. Yeah, yeah. I saw that. I enjoyed that. That's pretty old. That was that mean the early 90s or maybe the late 80s?
I would say early 90s.
Yeah, early 90s. Yeah, you should definitely see that, especially before this remake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're going to try to copy those visuals, and it's really odd because the art direction is really great in that film, but I don't know if it's necessarily going to make a good looking live action movie.
Yeah, it's more of an adaptation of the anime than it is like it's like a copy of a copy of a copy in a sense, you know?
Right.
They're based because the comic was groundbreaking in a sense, because Masamune Shiro's like stories are always really good. Mm-hmm. But I think the movie was what made that really successful, and when it showed like animation, what animation can do story wise and direction wise.
Right. Yeah, tone is really it's really nice in that movie, and small.
Can't say I'm really excited about Scarlett Johansson being in it. Not really for the whitewashing complaints, just the fact that I've never been impressed with her in a movie. No, not especially.
I didn't care
for Lucy, and she had to carry that. I mean, Lucy has some good moments, but overall, it's not a good movie, and she's not good in it. Under the Skin, which is
it's an interesting idea.
Maybe nobody could have done a good job in that.
I thought that movie would have been much more interesting with just an interesting to look at person that you've never seen before.
Right.
You know, I think that would have been, she was very distracting to me. Her presence in that film was very distracting.
Yeah.
I think it sold a lot of tickets because she undressed, but
I think
she was a little distracting, and I really would have enjoyed that story more if I wasn't like, recognize you very much. Yeah, right.
I don't think she was the problem with the movie. I think the problem with the movie was too slow paced. So it went on too much. It was too repetitive. So they have some interesting concepts, like you were saying, Jeremy, like how she consumes people,
right? How they visually represented her victims being consumed. That was very interesting, and some people have already kind of knocked that off, that empty room kind of look for different I've seen that again.
Stranger Things.
Oh yeah, Stranger Things. Right. Yeah, that's right. The opposite, whatever that's called, the upside down.
Yeah,
whatever.
Inside Out.
Kind of. Had a little bit of that same. Yeah, that same feeling.
That black void.
Right.
Kind of working on like a pool of blackness.
Right.
Well, they definitely took it.
Yeah, they
exactly that. Huh. Well, that's a shame because that was the thing it had going for.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, you would see it over and over and over again. You're like,
right.
Okay,
right.
Is there a point to this movie?
Right. Yeah, I just don't know how that she's become this de facto female action star, because I don't think she, I mean, you see the guy, you see the much more athletic, or the man in the wig doing her tumbling or her fighting effects. You see a lot of action doubles in her roles. And I don't think she particularly is fit for that. She doesn't come across as very athletic or very agile, particularly in her build.
Yeah.
It's funny, King Arthur sparked zero conversation.
You remind me of that first King Arthur movie that came out. Not the first one, but like the one that came out like 10
Excalibur.
Years ago.
Excalibur.
No, Excalibur. I love Excalibur because John Borman.
Yeah,
I watched
good.
Zardoz as
you
well.
You think, you're thinking Arthur?
Yeah, Arthur.
Mm.
Yeah.
With it was like Arthur, ching, 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 Guinevere.
Oh, right.
I don't think Arthur was the dual-wheeled guy.
Oh, Lancelot was the dual-wheeled dude.
Oh, was he? Yeah, okay.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe King Arthur would actually, like, what can you tell us about King Arthur then?
Not much, but King Arthur King as the character? I could
tell
you a little
bit.
Well,
I mean, like, I loved reading, I never read all of it, but I read some of Malory, and I liked the John Borman adaptation.
It looks...
I read also the Tolkien adaptation of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. So I'm
you know who
kind
has
of into
the best adaptation or the best depiction of King Arthur is John Steinbeck.
The Once and Future King? No.
No,
that's T.H. White.
Yeah. No, it's John Steinbeck, and I think it's just the stories of King Arthur and a Nice Round Table or something like that. And it's got all the ones that you really know well as The Knight with Two Swords, which is Sir Balin. His brother, Sir Balin. That was really good.
Wow. Was that something he wrote when he was in Hollywood? Or is that, I don't know. Yeah, I don't
know. I don't know when he wrote it, but
wow,
yeah.
Wow, that's funny. Yeah, because that's an interesting...
I had it as a kid, yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't know who John Steinbeck was, and then you find out, oh, wow, he wrote all of these classics.
Right.
So,
oh, wow.
So just imagine a legendary writer writing something like that, and it definitely lives up to it. But it's very depressing. Like, you're reading it as a kid, and it's like, wow, there's no happy endings in this story. And it's when you watch like The Sword and the Stone, you're like thinking, oh, it's, you know, it's going to work out really well for this kid. And it's like, it doesn't. No, man, your life's going to suck. Don't fall in love. Don't have a kid.
I'll check it out, man. Like, in this new movie, I wonder... I've been tainted by this image of like Hollywood's vision of...
I think it's
Sir
gonna,
Arthur, the first night with
maybe it's
because
of the
Richard
John
Gere.
Steinbeck book, but you know, I always want to give a King Arthur story a chance, and it looks good. I mean, as far as, but even like Arthur looked good when you looked at the pictures and things like that. But then the setup is, or the premise is, Arthur from the streets to the throne, and you're like, okay, what are the streets going to be? Yeah, so it might be very fantasy-esque or D&D-esque, where it's or even like Games of Thrones or Games of Thrones. Game of Thrones. Games of Thrones. Yeah.
You're not drinking tonight, I'm surprised.
No, it's like that
tea.
Did you guys spike this ice tea?
You loopy, man.
Yeah.
You want some vodka to go with that?
No, I'm good.
Nah, man, I'll give it a go. I'd like to see a better adaptation of author.
I'd like to see if Charlie Hunnam can actually act. Because if you watch Pacific Rim, your verdict would be no.
You're right.
And you watch Sons of Anarchy, your verdict would be no. I don't know. Sons of Anarchy, I was a massive fan until they went to Ireland. And then, I don't know, then I just fell off a cliff. And then, like, Charlie Hunnam is just like, oh, man, you're just so tiresome. The Dark Tower?
Oh, the TV series coming out.
Yeah, that looks pretty intriguing.
Yeah, I just read The Gunslinger.
Yeah?
I got to read the second book.
Yeah, it's really hard if you only read The Gunslinger to get an idea of what the Dark Tower story is going to be, because it's pretty much just the gunslinger and making references, you know, to the Dark Man.
You're the Man in Black.
Man in Black, yeah. Dark Man.
Dark Man. Liam Neeson.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good. It was a quick read for the most part. I enjoyed it. I liked the relationship between the gunslinger and the little boy. I'm not going to say anything. It's a spoiler alert, man.
Right.
Yeah. So, but I kind of, the ending was a little out there.
Yeah.
And it was just, didn't make a lot of sense, because I think it was really leading up to something else. And I kind of, and Stephen King even said that he saw the complete Dark Tower series as one story. So even though he finished the book there, it wasn't like the story was over. And I think that's what kind of seemed a little weird to me, because I'm like, I'm at the end of the book and I'm just like, oh, this is really dragging on. And it's like, it's going nowhere, because it's just leading me to the next book.
Right. And that's unusual for Stephen King's very good writing self-contained books, which is rare talent these days. Yeah.
One thing I'm surprised we haven't talked about yet was Star Wars. Is anyone looking forward to anything Star Wars?
Oh, yeah, that Rogue One movie is coming out. Right. But that's actually this year, right?
That's this year. Yeah, that's it. And Christmas. Episode 8 is next year. But they're both coming soon.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you not excited?
I'm interested. Yeah, I'm very interested to see what they're going to do. And the one thing that I'm a little worried about that the Marvel comic book movies have me afraid of is it may get really formulaic. And even if you love Star Wars and you love the setting and you love the characters, you're going to start to get frustrated with how they're just plugged into this same cookie cutter kind of filmmaking.
You bring up a good point there. Yeah, because like, I'm not one for the superhero movies just because of the formula, the cookie cutter mold that they come out of. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in seeing Rogue One, because from what I see from the trailers, it looks exciting. Forest Whitaker's in it. Donnie Yen's in it.
Darth Vader.
Donnie Yen! If you're a fan of Blade 2. Yeah, what else has Donnie Yen been in?
Like, he's been in some... He's
in the best scene in Blade 2, and he does the point at the guy, and then the guy kills him.
Well, one of the things that has got me more into Star Wars recently is I've been watching the Clone Wars. I never watched the Clone Wars animated series. I've just finished season 2, and it's pretty good. It's pretty darn good. A lot of really good stories there. And because of the Clone Wars, I went back and watched episode 1, and I have to say, I enjoyed it a lot more, because I see a lot of the same technology, I see a lot of the same ships, I see a lot of the same Trade Federation robots and stuff. You're watching these stories with Anakin and Obi-Wan Kenobi, and when I went back to episode 1, it was like little kid Anakin, who really annoyed the piss out of me at the beginning with, I watch it now and I say, oh man, that's little Anakin. So yeah, I guess I'm totally getting into Star Wars again because of this TV series, and that really leads to me being excited for something like Rogue One.
I don't know if excited is the word I would use, but yeah, I'll go see Rogue One. I'll try to see it in the theater. I think maybe it is a Marvel effect for me in a sense, not necessarily the cookie cutter formula, but because there's so many movies along the same storyline that you kind of, it's hard to maintain excitement. You can maintain interest, I suppose, but you can't really maintain excitement for the whole lineup that they have. Rogue One, I know how it's going to end.
Right.
I've some of the characters, like that droid that they have, might be interesting, but it seems like it's, oh, there's your C-3PO.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We have a 0.001% chance of survival or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then a little snappy, oh, he's trying to be helpful.
Yeah, right. And you're like, never okay. Tell me the odds.
Yeah, okay, I get it. But yeah, the visuals look good. And it looks like it could be a fun movie to see in the theater. And I don't think you're going to remember almost any of the characters' names.
Yes, yeah.
So it won't be like Star Wars was for me. I can never have that again. Where I actually knew the characters' names, although, interesting fact about me, not really, but I thought Luke Skywalker was Darth Vader. I mixed up the names.
Oh, wow.
See, I didn't get as much into Episode 7, but this Clone Wars has been a lot of fun, man. And yeah. I can see like the animators just being like, oh, this was really cool to add this here.
It's a real shame with that series because I think they started giving them a lot of freedom at the end of it. So the last two seasons, like 4 and 5, I think get really, really interesting. And they go
sad.
Through.
I hear 5 is 7.
Yeah, yeah. They go through a lot of interesting stuff, and then that sale to Disney happened, and they just cut them off, and it was just the
Rebels came out,
right?
And then it has some of the same characters.
Yeah, yeah. But I think Rebels doesn't have that same. They don't have that freedom and that originality to just kind of play with those characters, and they bring back like Darth Maul and things in the Clone Wars seasons and stuff. It's interesting. Yeah, it's. I think people really liked where that was going, and then it just stopped. Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about Untitled Warner Brothers comedy coming out December 22nd, PG-13.
cast to be announced.
Cast or director. But yeah, they've got the rating and the release date. That's set. Great.
They just need a script and some other people.
Yeah. And it's a comedy.
Yeah, it's going to be funny. It's a Warner Brothers, I mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, Untitled Warner Brothers comedy is in the working title. So I hope it delivers on that promise.
Starring an actor.
Directed by someone. Written by committee. Yeah. So that's pretty sad.
That's amazing.
And Chips.
Chips.
That's really good.
I'm kidding, really?
I think people have been really crying out for Chips. I mean, it's always on TV.
Would love that.
It's always on TV.
Dead now.
Jeez.
How about Samurai Jack? Man, Genndy Kaczkowski's coming back to reprise the role to direct Samurai Jack.
Never saw that Samurai Jack.
Wow. So Cartoon Network?
Cartoon Network. Wow. And which is really exciting for me because he actually got canned and was never able to finish Symbionic Titan. And if he comes back into Samurai Jack and is successful, I would love to see him revisit that other series as well. But that's just skepticism.
I'm amazed, though, he's going back to Cartoon Network because they've treated him very badly. He did the great Clone Wars cartoons, those very short.
Yeah, those were so good.
Really good. And then they had a chance, you know, they could have continued that as the Clone Wars series, but then they went to the CG, that Taiwanese CG studio, and then just jumped him. Yeah, so that's a shame.
We started doing Symbionic Titan after that, and they got into a big dispute about how he should direct the show and make it more like Ben 10, and he decided he didn't want to do that, so they just canceled it. They never actually finished the story. Which stinks. It's such a good show. Then he went off and started working for Sony and started doing things like Hotel Transylvania, which is okay.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah. I thought it was okay.
I saw it on the plane.
Yeah. And then I saw this animation test he did for a Popeye movie, which looked really cool. I really like how he animated it, and I think it had a great potential, but that's never come about either. Mm. So I think he kind of is on bad terms with Sony as well.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see Samurai Jack. I'd love to see him do something else.
Did you like the original Flatliners?
Yeah, that was the classic? You mean the classic?
The classic,
Jerry Bruckheimer movie, right?
Kevin Bacon, Kiefer Sutherland?
I mean, it was classic, but it was always constrained because they really didn't have the technology to really show what they wanted to show. So 2017 is going to deliver on the full potential. So there's going to be a new Flatliners movie, and it's going to be a remake, I guess. It's just going to be the Flatliners.
It could actually be the children of the original cast.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Be Kiefer Sutherland's younger brother, David Sutherland. I forget his name. He was in Lost Boys Part 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you saw Lost Boys 2 or 3.
No. Which one is the one that they brought back Corey Feldman and they didn't bring back
Corey
Haim?
That was Part 2. I think Corey Haim died.
They could have brought him back in Flatland.
Starting Corey Haim. Oops. So like the documentary or the really reality TV show of the, maybe it was the two boys showing him working on Lost Boys 2, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he had to wait, or he said, excuse me, I got to go to my trailer, and pretty much got doped up.
Oh.
And he was gone in his trailer for like hours, and then he's trying to do the scene all high and he couldn't do it. And he has like one line or something. It was really sad.
But he's making a comeback. He was on Good Morning America.
Well, Corey Philbin, yeah. Corey Philbin. No, Corey Haim.
You're talking about Corey Haim.
Yeah, I was talking about Corey Haim. I was like, Corey making a comeback. And I was like, are you still continuing this joke?
No, yeah, Corey Philbin.
He's going to be on The Walking Dead or something. Corey Feldman, that was a pretty good dancer team. Yeah,
that was good. Yeah,
he's got the passion.
He does.
Yeah,
he does. And the angels.
You know what he used to do?
Yeah, Corey Feldman or Corey Haim?
A lot of drugs.
Corey Feldman. And he might still do it. He rents out his house for parties. And you can rent to meet and hang out with Corey Feldman and his angels.
Nice. Well, yeah. That sounds like a moneymaker.
And it's a different price list and just how close you get to the angels. And, it was really sad. This article on Vice was just really, really sad. Wow. Are we ready to move on to the games?
I think so, man. Sure. I could talk about movies forever, but... What are you looking forward to in the world of gaming?
Well, it's in pre-order now, so it's not looking forward to it too far ahead, too far into the future. But Blood Bowl is getting reissued by Games Workshop, so that's
you've already pre-ordered.
Are you pre-ordering it?
I have not. No, it's on the website. You can pre-order. Oh. I mean, it's whatever that is, the pre-release.
I couldn't find it on the website.
Oh, really?
It's under the box games, right?
Or it should be. Yeah. They did. I stumbled upon
that flyer game that Games Workshop.
Oh,
has.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just clicking on the other things.
Yeah, so they're re-releasing that with two teams. Push fit minis, humans and orcs, and I guess the rule set is exactly the same, just probably the graphic design is different, but they have they include different templates, of course now new dice and everything, just to kind of update the look of it, but the rule set is the same. So like we were talking about with Malifaux and dice games and miniatures, it's super random, you know, so it's big failures, you know, if you roll bad you're gonna get stomped, so
and your ball fumbles,
right, so it'll be maybe some people won't like the fact that there's no modernization to the rule set, but they are also going to do a supplement. What are they calling it? Death Zone Season 1. So it's going to be the kind of tournament rules. And then they're also releasing additional teams. So I'm looking forward to that and see if we can get some people interested in a season of Blood Bowl.
Well, I'm interested. I have the original Blood Bowl, which was a bookcase game. I brought it back with me. Maybe we can try it out.
And that's cardboard?
Yeah, cardboard
counters?
Yeah, well, if you're people who are unfamiliar with what a bookcase game is, it's the, you know, the Avalon Hill games?
Yes. Yeah.
So the idea is like you put it in a bookcase so it's that size.
Ah, right.
That's all those classic board games that Games Workshop used to make. That's the format they came in. Right. So I have that. And then I had the deluxe second edition, which was not that there was two types of second edition, but it was certainly much more deluxe or much more extravagant than the first edition, which was the Styrofoam field.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then after that, I didn't get that edition, but it was the cardboard field, which looks like what they're doing for this one.
Yeah, it does. But I'm sure.
And I also had Dungeon Bowl, which was for the second edition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Which was orcs and no, it was elves and dwarves.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see and see how well they support it with additional, like the named players.
That's
and
on things. My list, Blood Bowl. And we talked about whether or not we wanted to split Blood Bowl, but then I thought I might want to get my own. So we'll see what the price is. I think I might go for 150, judging.
Right. But the teams, I mean, it's only 12 minis, but the teams look pretty reasonable. Yeah, so.
And the miniatures look really great.
Yes, they do.
Definitely a step up from the second edition minis that I have.
Yeah, it's nice. I think the new Games Workshop stuff has a really nice balance between, you know, it still has the feeling of some of that hand sculpted stuff, but it's definitely computer, you know, it's computer built. So, it's and the fit for those snap to fit minis is really nice. How about you, Alan? Any games you're looking forward to?
Well, I'm wondering, like, Blood Bowl, they haven't released a price on that yet, have they?
I think so. It's on the site for pre-order, so I think the yen, it's like 15,000 yen. It's pretty pricey.
It's like 150 bucks.
Yeah, right, yeah. It's pretty, yay. I can't remember. No, I think it was, the dollar price was like around 80, so it can't be 150.
What?
Wasn't it 80?
I didn't see it on the pre-order.
Oh, okay.
I looked for it, I couldn't find it.
Well, that'd be like 100 bucks for us.
Well, I was using 150 because I was looking at something like the Horus Heresy. I think that was about 150.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Even the flyer games, which is only like the two flyers, that That goes for 100.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that game. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So it'll definitely be north of $100.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about that. I mean, $100 isn't bad to pay for a game that you'll get a lot of play out of. And mm-hmm. and actually, the game that I'm really looking forward to next year is about $100. It's Vital Lacerda's new game mm-hmm. called Vital Lacerda. His okay. new game called Lisboa. It's based off of the city of Lisbon, well, now called Lisbon. And mm-hmm. Back in the early 1800s, they mm-hmm. had like earthquake / tsunami / fires broke out everywhere. The town was completely destroyed. Mm-hmm. A big disaster. Mm-hmm. And they brought in a bunch of developers to go and rebuild the city. And the game is about rebuilding the city. So you have to...
Is it a worker placement game?
Not really a worker placement. Have you played any of Vital Lacerda's other games? Like The Gallerist, Kanban, or...
I played The Gallerist.
You played The Gallerist?
No. No, yeah. No, I played Fresco.
No, it's not Fresco. The other game, Vinos. He did Vinos recently. Really heavy Euros, but at the same time, they always have a lot of theme. I think I like Euro games, but often it feels like the theme's kind of pasted on. Like Carcassonne can be re-themed.
Yeah, that's...
Kingdoms can kind of be like re-themed, for example. It feels like the mechanics of the Euro have like kind of reason for why they exist within the theme. Like, for example, in The Gallerist, you have like these assistants, and sometimes you put your assistants to go out into the international market and they go out there and try to get you deals on this auction and stuff like that. So,
but that sounds like worker placement.
I would say that it's not, just because his games are more about right? You have like four spots where you can go. You take your pawn for the most part, and you can go to one of the four places.
Okay.
And at each location, there's usually two or three options that you can do.
So Lisboa would be something similar, where you put your developers on certain sections.
It's more like engine building, I think. You're out there, you're building, you have like a main player mat, and you go and you clear rebel, and you kind of add to your player mat to kind of build your engine to get the most money and victory points.
Oh, in I see the what end you game. Mean. Okay.
So I've become a big fan of Vital Lacerda. I'm like, as developers, I've become a big fanboy of his stuff. So this is going to be the third game produced through Eagle Griffin. So first was The Gallerist, mm-hmm. then Vinos, and now this one. And they're like these three big boxes with this really high quality production. Like when you look at one of these games, you look at how beautiful the production of the game is, and how well the design is. And I've been playing The Gallerist and Vinos a lot recently, and I'm really excited for this third one. That's going to be another $107 down the drain.
The components on those games are gorgeous. It's really just visually they're very beautiful.
Even though I said I wanted to get Blood Bowl,
it's pretty gorgeous.
It's pretty big.
Yeah,
but you know, I wouldn't mind like if they started making these games a bit smaller.
Yeah,
you run out of space. Where are you gonna put these?
Definitely.
Like living in Japan, we don't have a basement to just like chuck all your stuff, or a garage. So
mini games especially, man.
That's one thing that keeps me away from mini games. But my one, and having said that, I'm now going to talk about the game I'm most interested in, which is going to be a mini game, and it's called Star Rogues, and it's made by Opsry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Opsry's publishing it. Yeah,
and that's who does Frostgrave, which was currently my favorite mini game, and Star Rogues is like Necromunda, I guess, would be the closest comparison.
Right.
Where you play like a space gang. I just really like the rule set for Frostgrave. I've bought another one that's like mythological combat. I'll get Star Rogues, and we'll probably do it Lego League style, which is what we do with our mini games. And you'll see in our upcoming Frostgrave episode is where we got like use Lego figurines to play these games. And that's easier for me because they're easier to store. It's quicker to get right into the game and play. And it's really easy to mix and match. So I'm really excited about that. The game will probably be, I think we've already seen a price, or it's going to be about $20 it'll be sub $30 for the rule set. And then you just use the Lego that you already have. And I already was building a Necromunda gang, so now I can just repurpose them for this game.
Yeah, it should be fun. Yeah, the thing that I read about the game is that the activation system is new. Like it's a new concept. So there's kind of this chaotic activation. Yeah, that sounds very compelling. And the Frostgrave Lego League Frostgrave we've been doing has been really fun. So I'm looking forward to a sci-fi theme as well.
Yeah.
You know, thinking of sci-fi theme, I was wondering about your thoughts about the sci-fi Pathfinder game that's coming out.
Oh yeah. What's it called?
Starfinder or something? Starfinder.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't know much about it. I mean, based off of Pathfinder, I would say that the production values were really good. And I've only recently bought Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, and I'm really pleased with that purchase. I bought the Storm King's Thunder was the impetus for it. So I wanted to play that particular adventure. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I got to go get the Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master's Guide, Monster Manual. So I ordered the four books together, looked through them, really well done. But if I'm going to compare it with Pathfinder, one thing Pathfinder does better is just the art, the inside art. Mm-hmm. I might say that the covers for Dungeons & Dragons are better, but the inside art in Pathfinder are just amazing, really draws you into the game.
Well, so the same artist from 4th edition, isn't it? Yeah, the same guy did the art for Pathfinder, did the art for 4th edition.
I think the covers were the same person, but the art inside, I think it was a variety of artists.
For 4th?
No, for Pathfinder.
I'm pretty sure the same artist did all the art for Pathfinder.
Okay. He does all the characters.
Yeah. Wayne Reynolds.
Yeah. He does all the characters, but I don't think he did all the big spread art. But he could have. But if he did, he used did a really good job with it. So I would be really excited to see at least what Starfinder looked like. But if the rule set was similar to Pathfinder, I don't know. Yeah, if I would be too excited to play it.
Rogues will be star rogues and fighters will be star fighters. Yeah, if they're just going to reskin it.
I'd like to see Starfinder meets Pathfinder kind of, what is this strange portal? Spaceships, what is this?
Right. I would just kind of dread what the combat... The starship combat rules would look like. But it could be really... I mean, they certainly put a lot of thought into the games, mm-hmm. and you know that they're going to support it with everything under the sun. You're going to get, hey, here's another Space Hulk playmat. Mm-hmm. Here's another one. Yeah, here are some cards of all your laser guns.
Yeah, that's true.
So you certainly could commit to that game and continue spending. I'm curious, but... looking forward to it? No.
Nah, same. Yeah. I mean, I got the core Pathfinder book and the Monster Manual, and that's about it. Just because it's a game to play if I ever feel like it. I never actually played anything except for the beginner box.
I sold it off, and only because I didn't see a point of having it. 13th Age was my D&D alternative. Uh-huh. And then now I have D&D 5th edition, so I'm pretty set for fantasy. I also got a Song of Ice and Fire role-playing. Yeah. So I have that as well, so I'm done. Yeah.
I didn't mind 4E that much.
Yeah, but 13th Age is 4E and 3E together.
Yeah.
And I think 7. Does a better job. So it was, okay.
I guess, you know, that is my dive into miniature 13, combat. What? Mini games was 4E, you know? Yeah. I told you I haven't played any miniature games, but I have played 4th
If you
edition.
Like 4E for the mini combat, then you won't like 13th Age. 13th Age makes the character building and character setup and style with like the different powers and even the design on the page is very similar to 4E, but the combat itself is very narrative as opposed to miniature gaming.
Was it Theater of the Mind?
Theater of the Mind, even like the way the ranges are done. It's actually really easy as a game master, as well as the monsters are very minimalistic in the stat blocks. Again, really, really easy. Yeah. And I actually really love the way they do the monsters because it was like, it just gives you just enough to insert them in the adventure and you can obviously have a lot to riff on. But it made it an absolute breeze to run the game. Versus Pathfinder, which I didn't run, that was somebody else. But I could just imagine how much bookkeeping he had to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of like the tactical combat that it involved, but also playing Pathfinder, it seemed very, very similar to 4E as well, except for like the daily powers and stuff, but the combat seemed similar.
Yeah, 4E and 3E were similar in a lot of respects.
3.5. I played 3E. 3.5 was...
Okay, 3.5,
more grid-ish.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other games that you're looking forward to that are board games rather than mini games?
How about a card game?
Oh, yeah. I love card games, man. That's my thing.
Yeah, you know about this. So Alan and I are both buying core sets for Arkham Horror.
Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
The new Fantasy Flight Living card game with the Lovecraft theme. But yeah, so we're looking forward to trying that out. And it's cooperative as opposed to adversarial.
Yeah.
Competitive.
So like 1 to 4 players.
Right.
So you can play it solo if you want, but you know, you can go in there with friends, which would be even more exciting. And it has a lot more mechanics that you could use with more than one player.
And so similar to the Lord of the Rings Living card, in the kind of the structure, kind of the storytelling.
In a sense, I think from what I've read, like I play Lord of the Rings as well, and it seems a lot different. You know, the way the deck building goes, the way the exploration goes, and the way that the actual narrative is built. Like, there's a lot more story involved. The locations that you go to is really cool. I don't know if you read up on this.
No.
But you start off in a room, like inside of a mansion, for example. This room will connect to other rooms based off of this symbol on the bottom. Like maybe it's a red circle with a square in it. So basically, from that room, you can only go to other rooms that have red circles and squares in it. So like from the hallway, it connects to like three other rooms. But you can only get to the attic from a certain area. Right. So like it's kind of interesting how you kind of explore this mansion, mm-hmm. and you can't just hop anywhere. You have to actually kind of progress through the mansion.
Oh, nice.
And one of the latest expansions that are coming out is like you're on this train and it's kind of built train cars. And each train car is going to be like a different theme to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's always like a, you could lose, you could die, you could win, you could beat the bad guys, or you can like resign. And then always has like a penalty, and it's like a campaign mode. By resigning, usually for the most part, you have to resign from a certain room. Like it has that option to like retreat, to run away.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get there. For example, on the train, if you're on the other end of the train, maybe you have to run back to the engine and get through all these monsters and like evade them. It seems like a really cool design. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I like the idea of cooperative, and also the theme should be really fun. I mean, just, you know, battling the mysterious forces of the old ones. Yeah, I think that sounds great. Any other board game?
Yeah, Terminal Directive.
Terminal Directive.
Well, we play Netrunner. You know about Netrunner, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you heard of it?
Oh, it's a joke.
There's this Terminal Directive coming out, which is a legacy-type expansion for the Android Netrunner competitive card game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still played with two players, and it's played with your regular Android Netrunner card pool.
I wish they would come up with a role-playing game for that.
Yeah.
Sorry, but yeah, there is...
World of Android. You can get that book. But this is a really new concept to the competitive card games, and it's going to be a campaign mode for Android Netrunner. It sounds absolutely amazing. I'm definitely excited for it. And I think it's going to revitalize the game quite a lot, just because all you need is a single core and this expansion, and you can play a two-player legacy game with anybody. They don't need their own cards. Like, these are my card. I play Corp, you play Runner.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, people who weren't interested in the game or people who left the game might end up coming back just to play this legacy campaign. Mm.
Yeah, it's very interesting that, you know, everyone's going to have a core. That's how they bought into the game, so they can participate very easily. Yeah, I think that's very clever. Very good.
And a lot of people do look for, like, the standalone card game. I know when the news dropped, as Alan said, people kind of jumped onto the link and saying, great, this could be the standalone I was looking for. I know somebody's kept their core set. They sold off all the expansions and just kept this core set as kind of a standalone game to play. Mm. Kind of limited.
Right.
But we'll see, because when you have like the core, some things work better than others. You know, if you have a, you know, an ID that requires a lot for you to have a lot of viruses, and there is the one, the noise, you know, is it going to be able to provide enough for that ID to really work, or work the way some people might want them to work? So I'm certainly interested in seeing how it goes. It just dropped today.
Do you think that's going to distract? I mean, this is they've done this rule set, and this is just done. So it's not going to distract them from data packs and expansion.
Not at all. So what happened was, at the end of the current cycle, the Flashpoint cycle, and the beginning of the next cycle, which is the Red Sands, there was a number gap. It was like ANR 41, and then the first pack of the Red Sands was ANR 43. And they're like, what happened to 42? What's this? And like everyone was wondering, it's like, is there going to be like a second core? Is there going to be a new expansion? What's going on? So we kind of thought there was going to be a new product that they're going to put in there. And this is what it is. It's this campaign expansion, and you're going to play it in its legacy style. So basically, the story will unfold each time you play, because it has like little sealed packs of cards that you open when you get to that stage in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you want to play it again as the other side, but you'd probably have to buy another game to do that. But once you're done with the cards, once you've done the campaign mode, you get these cards and you can use them in regular tournament decks. So it's not like Pandemic Lemmix Legacy. Once the game's done, it's done. You're just going to have like this tarnished box of components that you have nothing, you can't do anything with.
You think they'll come out with like Legacy Pack?
Maybe. I don't know. This is like a
standalone game. but you just need these legacy packs.
I think
you can still play with the same cards, but you just need these legacy packs.
Well, the thing is, I think it's drawing a lot of attention to like people who want to play the game like campaign mode, and I could see them continuing support if it's successful, because every cycle they decide to launch another campaign setting just to kind of reinvigorate the story for the people who want to play for that aspect.
Yeah, I think that's a clever approach, because if you don't want to play competitively and you're not doing tournaments, then you are going to eventually kind of cool down with Netrunner if you don't have a local group or a local meta. And this is a way to say, hey, guys, remember those Netrunner cards we used to play with? Let's get together and, you know, do something else with them. I think that's interesting.
Well, certainly I dropped out of the data pack.
Rat race.
Yeah, the race.
So good, though.
Yeah, and I hear that, and I like what I hear, but I'm just, like, looking at the money I'm spending. I mean, I just committed to, we're going to talk about it a little bit more in a future episode. Siege of the Citadel, the Mutant Chronicles game, the board game.
So we should have a whole Mutant Chronicles episode coming
Absolutely, up. Yeah. As well as a role-playing game, yeah. So, I mean, but it's a lot of money. You know, it was over, how much did we spend on that? 150?
I think so. Yeah.
And to get to the deluxe.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, with everything, and there's no shipping on that yet.
Yes. Yeah. So things have to give. Right. Yeah. And as I said, I got my 5e. Kind of looking.
You got
forward.
A whole stack of games recently, man.
Yep. Because Fantasy Flight Games is no longer going to have the Games Workshop license.
Right.
So I was worried. I had my eye on Fury of Dracula, the third edition. I had the second edition. Loved it. One of my favorite games, maybe my favorite game. Mm. I was like, wow, eventually I'm going to get the third edition. And then when I found out the news, I had to get that. But I already had Letters for Whitechapel ahead of it to buy, just because it was different. Well, it's a similar style, but it's different from Fury of Dracula, second edition. So then I had to buy both of those games, of course. And then I had to buy all of the Dungeons & Dragons stuff.
I got
as you do
too.
Now.
I had to get the team manager, Blood Bowl team manager, third expansion, just so I can complete my game.
Yeah. But those were like number one and two on my board game list. Number three is XCOM, so there's no panic on that. But
yeah, I had Chaos in the Old World.
Did you end up getting it?
No, I had that in my shopping cart for years on Amazon. And it's, as soon as that happened, it sold out and it's like $300 or whatever. Like, okay. Dang. Guess I should have pulled the trigger on that a little earlier.
Game. It's not $300 good.
Yeah.
It was the same thing that happened with like Blood Bowl, because I had that expansion in my cart forever and it was just like $11.
Mm. Yeah, so that was really interesting, the timing. So the Fantasy Flight license is over with Games Workshop. Now they're reissuing Blood Bowl, and they're probably going to start doing some more compelling, interesting board games to kind
of,
you know.
Well, they got the box set series, which I hadn't heard of I heard of a Blood Bowl, and then I'm like, it's been ages since I investigated what Games Workshop was doing, and then saw all of these different games that they had.
Yeah, so, and they reissued their own kind of the Age of Sigmar, Warhammer Quest type game.
Oh, Silver Tower.
Yeah, so
it's quite dear, the price.
Yes, it's pretty brutal. And they've got a lot of, you know, you can buy new heroes, but of course they're like $20 each for, you know, a single mini. Yeah. They're crazy. But it's really interesting that they're kind of like picking up production, because now they've got quite a library of board games. Some of them are using the miniatures from the game. Some of them are using original minis. Yeah. And also the board games were the first time that Games Workshop did the Horus Heresy, the 30K miniatures in plastic. So they're not Forge World. They're actually, you know, the Games Workshop minis in some of those games. So people were buying multiple copies of Betrayal at Kalth so they could build cheaper plastic 30K army. So yeah, so that's interesting. I'm interested to see what they're going to do. And I like that it's actually Games Workshop games instead of licenses developed by somebody else with other mechanics and things.
Sure, yeah.
Was there anything that you're not looking forward to? Is there anything you...
Sickness and death.
Is there anything that you're like not looking forward to in this upcoming year of gaming and media?
Yeah, I'm going to say the game that you said. Lisboa.
You know, look forward to Lisboa, Underworld 5, and everything else Alan's looking forward to.
No, I already said like some of the movies I'm not interested in.
There's a lot coming out in 2017. I got like a whole list of stuff here.
Mm. I don't know. Maybe I just don't have my finger on the pulse of RPGs anymore, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of RPGs coming out. I mean, I thought Delta Green was coming out next year, but hey, it already came out.
The Invisible Orb, what's the Kickstarter that just finished? The big black
one? Oh, yeah, the German game that they've translated?
No. I'm totally blanking. The Kickstarter where you buy the big box that opens up.
Oh, it's Monty Cook.
Monty Cook, yeah.
Yeah,
Monty
Cook. Yeah. Yes. Where people are like, it's art and a role-playing game together, and you're just like that guy is so smart.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not a fan of his games, but I'm certainly a fan of him as a business person.
Yeah, if he can, with a straight face, ask you for $3,000 for the version of the game, that's all good.
And get it, so well done, sir, well done.
Well, I have the Thunderstone edition of Numenera, but that's about as close as I got to Montcook. Yes.
I'm looking forward to Torg when it ever comes out again.
Not looking forward to. Mm-hmm. Torg, what is that Torg? I thought we were talking about things that you're not looking forward to.
Well, I don't...
Nothing.
I don't know. It's almost like saying, proving the existence of God. You know, how do you prove something?
Were you complaining to me earlier about, how I'm looking forward to everything and, there's nothing I'm not looking forward to? I had to go and do some crazy research here.
I guess, not looking not really. Forward to stuff. I just don't remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just kind of purged it.
Well, movies, for example. Is there any movies coming out that you're just kind of not excited for?
Kind of talked about that in the movies. Anything? We seem to be trying to end this episode. You're just
Let's see.
We're trying to break up with you, Alan, and you're just
all right.
It's not.
Cool.
It's not you. It's us. It's us.
Yeah. When it comes to games, it's hard to not look forward to stuff things that you just don't like. It's kind of I don't know. There's nothing that really pisses me off too much. Sometimes
I wouldn't
mind
trying Munchkin. I've never actually played GURPS but Steve Jackson Games Munchkin. I'd like to try that. So again, I'm not following your not looking forward to premise.
It's fine.
Not looking forward to. I don't play Pathfinder anymore, so I'm not looking forward to anything there.
Starfinder.
No. I
want a Blade Runner 2.
Blade Runner 2. Oh, we've moved back to movies. Not especially. I'm not looking. I'll probably eventually see it. I'm not excited about it.
Yeah, I'll see it. But
it was kind of a movie that was it. And when I finished watching the movie, I go, I really need a follow-up to that. I really need some closure. So
I'm a big fan of the first Blade Runner, but there's two coming out. I like Ryan Gosling, but just having something like Harrison Ford in there is kind of really bugging me.
Blade Runner, that was your problem with it, not Ryan Gosling?
No, Ryan Gosling's cool, man.
Yeah, he's great. I love him. Loved him in The Notebook and Drive.
Drive. But
Remember the Titans. He was in that movie.
Really?
Yeah, he did a good job. It's a good movie.
But, just by adding Harrison Ford in there, you're really kind of adding a bit of controversy to the original narrative. Ridley Scott recently came out with, Prometheus, and I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the movies that he's revisiting from his past glory days.
Well, I hope he doesn't touch White Squall, because that was a classic.
Or G.I. Jane.
Yeah. G.I. Jane's a good movie. Actually, White Squall was pretty good, too. Yeah. Kingdom of Heaven 2, They Come Back. Actually, they could do Kingdom of Heaven 2. I think it would have to be Richard Lionheart going back, because that actually happened after. I think that was Orlando the Third Bloom? Crusade.
Yeah. After
Was that?
After Orlando Bloom? Was that? Or what are we talking about? Kingdom of Heaven?
Oh, actually, at the end of Kingdom of Heaven, King Richard makes an appearance, speaking English, even though he spoke French, but as you would. Yeah.
They're remaking American Werewolf in London.
And you mentioned that. Yeah. When you mentioned it during the American Werewolf in London.
I did, but I didn't really get into it. It's directed by the son of John Landis.
Oh, Max is Max directing. Landis. I knew he was a part of it. I didn't know he was directing.
And it's produced by the people who did The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't know. The first movie is, as I said, a lot of the thing is how it's composed.
Mm-hmm.
It's editing and is one of its strong points. I don't know if that story is really that compelling to be retold. When you make a remake, you're you want to retell it to a new generation of people.
Right.
But the story is about a guy that gets bitten by a werewolf and turns into a werewolf.
Oh, that's just like the Wolfman, really.
But the thing is, really, does that story need to be retold? Why not just make a new movie?
Sure. I mean, they could have easily went an American Werewolf in a different place.
Paris.
Well, I was going to say New York, an American Werewolf in New York, but obviously they were going for London, American.
Right.
Yeah. Could have been a Canadian werewolf in New York or...
Puerto Rican werewolf in Venezuela.
I don't know. I'm a little skeptical. I mean, I'm sure it'll be good. And
I was going to make a starving joke. Yeah.
Anyway.
He starves. He's I just can't. They just don't have enough calories on these people.
Not sure if I'm looking... It sounds like it might be good.
Right.
Kind of skeptical.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, I think we should wrap it up.
That is the wrap sign. So sorry for dragging this out a little too long.
Well, that ends our episode on what we're looking forward to and not looking forward to in 2017. So what are you interested in? Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idolredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.